You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. When we look ahead to retirement, one big question, is, are you doing everything you can to maximize your Social Security benefits and save for the future? It's time to make sure your plan is rock solid. Visit planefe.com/hermoney to learn more about specific ways to do just that with a complimentary wealth checkup. Hey everyone, I'm Jean Chatsky. Thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money. So in today's episode, I had a fascinating conversation with Naomi Kahn. She's the author of the new book, Fair Shake: Women and the Fight to Build a Just Economy. And we get into why it's so difficult for women to get and keep top positions, particularly in the financial industry, where men are playing a game that unfortunately a lot of us just don't feel like we fit into. And we talk about solutions, starting with making connections in our communities and how to be allies to our coworkers when they're in a bind. I learned a lot from her. I think that you will too. And then in Mailbag, we're going to hear from a listener who is just feeling burnt out in the healthcare industry, but doesn't want to leave her coworkers in the lurch. And my daughter Julia jumps in and answers a question from a listener who's wondering where to meet friends who are as career-oriented as she is. And we are going to take a quick break. Her Money is proudly sponsored by Edelman Financial Engines. Retirement is on the horizon, and when we talk about saving and investing to prepare for our future, we also have to talk about Social Security. It is an important part of our financial futures, but too many of us don't do enough to maximize our Social Security benefits. That's why it may be time for a wealth checkup to help make sure your strategies are the best they can be for your unique situation. Personally, I think everyone needs a checkup about 10 years out from retirement. You can schedule your complimentary wealth checkup at planefe.com/hermoney. We are back, and here's my interview with Naomi Kahn. 11 years ago, and I gotta say, I cannot believe it's been that long. 11 years ago, Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, hit bookshelves and frankly blew up a good part of the world, at least the world that I live in. Her feminist manifesto encouraged women to stop holding ourselves back from working to reach positions of power and instead lean in and lean on other women's experiences to help them. As the mother of two young kids when she wrote the book, her message was that, yeah, you can have it all if you want it bad enough. And I think it's undeniable that, at least in part, that book moved the needle for the first time in the history of the Fortune 500 list. More than 10% of Fortune 500 companies are led by women. However, it's also true that more than a decade later, women are pushing back on this lean-in approach that placed so much responsibility on us, on individual women rather than on societal and economic structures surrounding us. Many are also questioning if they actually want to have it all in the first place. My guest today, Naomi Kahn, has dedicated her life's work to studying how we can fix the systems that hold women back in the workplace and how feminist theory intersects with the law. She is the Justice Anthony M. Kennedy Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Virginia School of Law and the co-director of the Family Law Center. And she's got a new book out with co-authors June Carbone and Nancy Levitt called Fair Shake: Women and the Fight to Build a Just Economy. Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We are just as excited to have you. And you have been digging into this for a long time. You've been exploring how feminist theory intersects with the progress that women are and are not making. Where are we right now
Well, as you mentioned, there are more women than ever who are top CEOs in Fortune 500 companies. However, more than ever is still only about 10%. So women are maybe progressing at the top, but very, very slowly. In the meantime, the gender wage gap itself has barely budged over the past 30 years. That is the gap between men and women's pay. Women are still earning an average of 82% of what men earn. And so if we look overall, if we look at the entire economic spectrum, women are not approaching equity in the way that one would have expected if one had started to look, say, in 1970. And the wage gap really was closing. But progress has stalled over the past 30 years or so.
Why do you think that is? I mean, I've been following the wage gap, it feels like, for decades. Like you, I'm frustrated that it doesn't seem to move at all, even more than a little bit. Why do you think that it has stalled? And well, why don't you answer that and I'll follow it up, because I've seen these studies that put the blame on the choices that women make, and they frustrate me too.
Well, yeah, as you said, the conventional explanation for women's lack of progress is the choices that we make in life. And then also there are those family responsibilities that we take on. So, and yeah, that is part of the explanation. If you look at what happens to mothers in the workplace after they have a child, they are more likely to leave the workplace, at least temporarily. So, there is something to the conventional explanation of family responsibilities and of women's choices. But when you dig down a little bit deeper and you look at women's choices, you wonder why women's professions are not paid as well as what have traditionally been defined as male professions. And then you start to dig a little bit deeper, as we did, because what we were concerned about is that conventional explanation has always been there. But notwithstanding the conventional explanation, women had progressed between, say, 1960 and 1990. And what we wanted to look at is, everything else being equal, why has women's progress stalled? And what we found is that even though women are increasingly likely to enter the workplace, what we found is all the highest paying sectors are male dominated. And even though women are more likely to be school teachers than computer scientists, that's not the full explanation. What we did was we looked at why, for example, the percentage of female teachers reached a modern low in the early 90s and then has grown back since then. Teaching has become more female dominated than it was 30 years ago. And so as we delved deeply into this, we kept on coming back to the same problems. And what we did in the book is we looked at a series of court cases, one at the Supreme Court, many in lower courts, and we occasionally talk to some of the people behind these cases. And wherever we looked, we found the same story. We found what we identify as a winner-take-all economy, which holds women back.
What does that mean, a winner-take-all economy, and how does it hold women back?
So we're using the term winner-take-all economy to describe the critical shift in the new economy as the ability of those at the top to take a much larger share of institutional resources for themselves. This new economy crosses job sectors, and it explains the patterns that had stumped us to try to explain why women's progress had stalled. The concept of a winner-take-all is not a new concept, of course, but we're looking at it as a way of saying that the winner-take-all world is a zero-sum game that produces negative-sum consequences.
Can you give me an example? Because it's feeling kind of theoretical, and I'm trying to, as you're talking about it, distinguish it in my mind from sort of what we're dealing with income inequality.
Okay. What happens is that there are internal competitions in workplaces, and the higher the stakes in the internal competition, the more likely it is that women will be pushed out. So we're thinking one of the companies that we profile in the book is General Electric. And Jack Welch, who helmed GE for many years, was seen by many as a management guru. What he did, what he instituted, was a rank or rank and yank system. So he would rank employees and he would yank the bottom 10%. So it became an internal competition to try to make sure that your job was not yanked. We profile an attorney who started out, who actually played the game, who was moving forward at GE and ultimately, at least in our telling, was pushed out by these internal competitions.
When we look at these things happening on a small scale or on a large scale, I'm very fascinated with the example that you gave about teachers, and I want to come back to it. But where does feminist theory intersect with all of this and with the progress that we're making? I mean, it's a term that, for better or for worse, and I think for worse, has become pretty loaded.
One of my colleagues, another law professor, talks about the F word. And she once wrote, and this is a quote from Professor Leslie Bender, "Feminists are perceived as bra burners, man haters, sexist, and castrators, as well as overly demanding and humorless," end quote from Professor Bender. But for many of us who think of ourselves as feminists, we certainly do not think of ourselves as sexist or castrators. We hope that we have at least some sense of humor. We are not bra burners or man haters. Instead, what we care about is greater gender equity. So we don't just care about women. We don't just care about men. We care about greater equity throughout the entire economy. And we look at the traditional power imbalance between men and women, and we say there is something rotten in that gender imbalance, and we would like to fix that. So we embrace feminism. We embrace feminist theory as a way of saying that we care about equality and equity. Feminism is the belief in the equality of people of all genders, a set of values aimed at undoing gender inequality and the structures that support it. It encompasses a variety of different perspectives. There's not one feminist theory, but the idea is to move towards gender equity. And it's become increasingly important, certainly in our economy, certainly in our personal lives, and certainly, as we've seen with the Supreme Court, with respect to reproductive justice and equality.
Yeah, absolutely. As you were describing your colleague's definition of a feminist, I was smiling in my head because I certainly don't think of myself as a castrator, but I don't even think of myself as a bra burner. I'm very uncomfortable without a bra. Something that my listeners probably did not need to know, but we'll tell them anyway. This is a judgment-free zone. You and your co-authors, you talk about something in the book that you call the triple bind, that if women, and this is straight out of the book, if women don't compete on the same terms as men, they lose. If women do compete on the same terms as men, they're punished more harshly for their sharp elbows or actual misdeeds. And when women see that they can't win on the same terms as men, they take themselves out of the game if they haven't been pushed out already, like the lawyer at GE that you write about. So How do we put ourselves in situations where this is not the case? I mean, when you're trying to take care of your own personal economy, right? I know I can't do anything about the interest rate. I can't do anything about the stock market. There's a lot of things that I can't control, but I do have some control over my own personal economy in where I choose to look for work, how I choose to navigate that career. Granted, I'm fortunate. I'm college educated. I know that I have a lot of privilege. But as we look to try to get a fairer shake for ourselves, how do we maneuver?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I think that we all struggle with, right? And, you know, there's no one size fits all response. I think what we found, you started us out by talking about leaning in. And one response is, well, we need to fix the system. Fixing the system, of course, does not help us in our day-to-day lives. But I think there are ways of making changes in our immediate environment. So one big thing, and I know others have said the same thing to you, but finding allies and mentors. So finding allies and mentors both within the place that you are working, but also outside of the place that you're working. So finding allies and mentors at other companies. We're all parts of so many overlapping communities. So reaching out to our communities for support. But so many studies have shown that finding allies and mentors can help us get ahead as well as help us maintain our sanity. So finding community both within and outside of work is absolutely critical. There's also, at some point, and we all hope we never get to that point, but if we are asked to do something that we find so morally repugnant that we can't do it, then it's time to draw on that network of allies and mentors and figure out another place to be where we are not going to be called on to do that, where we don't have to cheat to get ahead. The people that we profile in our book had the courage to stand up. And I'll say, as someone who used to represent plaintiffs in employment discrimination cases, those cases are tough. It takes an enormous amount of courage to find someone to represent you, to file a complaint, to go to court, to go through all of the questioning that goes with bringing one of these cases. So it's certainly not something that many of us will do or even that many of us should aspire to do. But it's also possible, if other people are in the same position, to build community within work, to work with other people in your workplace and to try to make changes together. Because chances are, if you're experiencing someone, so is someone else working close by with you. So building a sense of community, finding strength in that community is something that we can all do in our workplaces.
When you are approached or when you were approached to take on a case by somebody who felt that they were let go or fired and had a case, how did you figure out if in fact they did? I'm thinking about this. I have a good friend who was just let go in a round of layoffs from a large consulting firm after almost more than 30 years there. She took a look at the lay of the land. Most of the people let go were over 50. Many were women. But knowing that a large consulting firm is absolutely going to run the numbers and figure out the proportion of people that they're allowed to let go of before they have a problem legally, she figured, you know, I'll just get the best package that I can and not go down that road. But when do you know that you actually have a case?
In some ways, you don't actually know that you have a case until you get that ultimate decision from the court saying you've got a case. there are certainly laws that will protect, and it sounds like your friend might have had a case, perhaps, of both sex discrimination and possibly age discrimination, because age discrimination protections attach to at the age of 40. But there's a lot that goes into the decision of someone like your friend actually to move forward to bring a case. It can take years to work for a case to work its way through the courts. If you succeed, you can make changes. There are very strong laws that protect against sex discrimination, that protect against sexual harassment, but it can be an arduous process. On the other hand, we tell the stories of people who went to see lawyers and filed their complaints, and very soon thereafter, there were settlements because the companies themselves don't like facing this kind of action against them. They don't like facing this kind of publicity, and they also know that this will take time from management to pursue. And so there is the cases don't necessarily drag on for years, and it's certainly worth talking to an attorney just to find out if there is a case to be brought and what that case might consist of.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to dig into women in the financial services industry, which you write about, you cover in depth in the third chapter of the book. Before we do that, though, we're going to take a quick break. Let's talk retirement, shall we? Did you know that women are more likely to outlive our retirement savings than men are? That's why having consistent income, a paycheck for life, in addition to Social Security, can be a real game changer. That's where annuities come in. If you're not familiar with annuities, the concept is essentially that you take a chunk of money and turn it into a paycheck that you can start drawing on when you want to, next year or next decade. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity available from Gainbridge offers an impressive 5.95% APY long-term, but it also offers flexible withdrawals for unexpected expenses. The ParityFlex multi-year guaranteed annuity can be an important part of your financial future as you work to build a retirement you love. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for important information. This is a paid endorsement. I'm so excited to share my new favorite skincare brand, Oak Essentials. Oak Essentials line is full of luxurious products that really work, especially if you are trying to achieve that natural, no makeup look. Mother's Day is just around the corner, and this could be a great gift to treat all the well-deserving moms, moms-to-be, and mother figures in your life. Personally, I am loving the moisture-rich balm. It makes me feel like I never want to wear makeup again, and as you all know, I'm a makeup girl, so go ahead, treat yourself or treat someone else. My followers get 15% off their first order when they use code HERMONEY15 at checkout. That's 15% off, plus you'll get a gift with your first order at oakessentials.com. That's oakessentials.com. Promo code HERMONEY15. Go ahead, treat yourself, treat your mom. From luxurious skincare to meaningful self-care, you know you deserve it. We are back with Naomi Kahn, co-author of the new book, Fair Shake. You get into the enormous hurdles that women working in the financial industry face. This is top of mind right now as the Wall Street Journal recently published a story about women being passed over for top jobs at Goldman Sachs and documenting the fact that 2/3 of the women who were partners at the end of 2019 have left the firm or no longer have the title of partner. And they cite a lot of instances of the sort that you talk about. In the book, you said This is a problem because when we look at gender gaps in all occupations, and again, this is right out of the book, the top job categories are all in finance. What's it going to take to fix the financial services industry?
It's going to take a lot to fix the financial services industry. The financial services industry is one of those areas of the economy where pay has increased most dramatically in the last 30 years. And so that's also seen a huge increase in the winner-take-all economy. In the 1950s, we had something called the organization man, the man in the gray flannel suit. And yes, he was a man. But one of the things he said was, my company produces better products than yours. So you can contrast that today with what happens in the financial sector, where I think the brag is, my bonus is bigger than yours. And so we've moved from looking at company health as a whole to focusing on individual financial success. And if you look at, there were many things wrong with the organization man, many things wrong with the man in the gray flannel suit. Not the least of them was that it was generally a white man wearing the gray flannel suit. But there was something beneficial. There was less income inequality. The gap between CEO and average worker was much smaller than it is today. And this idea that I'm putting my company first as opposed to my individual gain, I think is a quite different mindset from what we see in the financial sector. It's a makeover. It's a do-over to change financial services. But I think the first step is more transparency. And learning about what happened at Goldman Sachs is hopefully going to be a wake-up call, not just to Goldman Sachs, but to other companies in the financial sector. There's been a movement towards sustainability investing, towards ESG/sustainability. And I know it's incredibly controversial. Some people might dismiss it as window dressing, but I'll take that window dressing. I'll take that. Let's start at least thinking about these issues, because being transparent, starting these conversations, is how we're going to bring about change.
And I think you're right. There's so many different lenses that you can apply to the way that you look in the world. I lead an investing club called Investing Fix for several hundred women, where we're learning about fundamentals of picking investments. And we've dug into ESG, sustainability. It's not the only lens that we use, but it is certainly a fascinating one, an important one, and one that we feel we should understand before just dismissing it outright, as so many stories have seemed to do lately. At the end of the book, you offer some solutions to push back on the winner-take-all economy. And I wonder if we could talk about some of those steps and how we might start putting some of them into practice.
The smaller ones, the more manageable ones in our daily lives are things like getting the lay of the land at your workplace, finding others who think like you, finding a job where you can, if not always live out your values, at least doesn't completely undermine your values, at the same time as you recognize that you are working in this economy. So there are changes at the micro level that you can make. You can speak out. You can, if you see someone else being harassed, you can support that person. You can be an ally to that person. So there are many things we can do individually. We also have a whole bunch of much more global solutions of what can be done. One of my friends was one of the first men at his law firm to take parental leave. He ultimately made partner, but people were kind of surprised that he had done this. So making sure that we share responsibilities, if we have children, making sure we share childcare responsibilities, making sure we share home care responsibilities if we are in a relationship. So there are changes. I mean, there are changes both in the workplace. There are changes in our individual lives as well that we can do outside of the workplace when it comes to work-life family balance. We talk about investing in individuals, in children, and in communities through, for example, better child tax credits like what we saw during the pandemic and which are currently starting to happen. And then as lawyers, one of our final recommendations is strengthening the rule of law. And so everything from strengthening current protections against discrimination, ending some of the mandatory arbitration procedures that we still see that prevent people from going to court or that prevent people from speaking up, ending confidentiality agreements so that people can learn about the successes of others, and overall, ensuring that we maintain a democratic system in our country.
We've talked a lot about people who work for companies. Before I let you go, we've had a rise in workers who are participants in the gig economy, who don't have that sort of a framework. And it can be very appealing when it comes to looking for ways to raise a family. But you write in the book that gig workers are also more vulnerable to economic instability. What would you say to women who are wondering if a freelance life is better for them?
There is so much to be said for job flexibility. And I think everybody appreciates having as much flexibility in a job as possible. And it certainly does help with raising children. And so the gig economy has all kinds of appeal for purposes of you set your own hours. It's definitely a really good option for so many people who may have at least temporarily dropped out of the workplace. It's a way to start to build up credentials again, to start to re-enter the workplace, but to do it very much on your own terms. One of the people we didn't profile in the book, but we interviewed, started her own dog walking agency. She was able to walk dogs when she wanted to. She was able to set her own time and her own terms and the amount of money that she was receiving. But she also had to pay a lot for healthcare, right? Because the gig economy doesn't come with insurance-provided healthcare. You have to pay your own Social Security taxes. And so in terms of long-term retirement security, it's important to continue to pay those taxes so that money will be there when you need it at a later point in your life. The lack of benefits is, of course, one of the downsides. It's also, studies have found that women underprice themselves in the gig economy. If you look at the same job, a man is likely to charge more than a woman, even if they have substantially identical credentials and are doing substantially identical work. So another piece of advice is don't undersell yourself. Value your own talents and make sure that if it's one of those where you're setting your own pay, make sure you set it appropriately. Look at what others are earning. And I should say the person we interviewed who started her own dog walking agency has ultimately decided to go back to school to get another degree because she does want more security in her life and she wants access to all of those benefits that come with a full-time job.
Naomi Khan, fascinating. If you had to look out 20 years from now, what do you think the world will look like? Where will we be in terms of economic parity for women?
Well, let's start with what I hope. What I hope is that we will be that stubborn gender pay gap, which remains stuck between 80 to 82 cents. That's going to start to decrease and that women will start to get paid more in comparison to men, that the gender pay gap will decrease. I'm going to hope that instead of 10% of Fortune 500 CEOs being women, that in 20 years, we might not be up to 50%, but even if we're not there, that we've moved up dramatically from 10%. And not only that, that the pipeline into those CEO positions is also robust. I am hoping for paid family and medical leave for everyone. In some states, that's a reality, but certainly not in all states and not at the federal level. I am also hoping for reproductive rights and justice. That too will change. Our understanding of that is certainly quite prominent right now as we think about those issues. Again, I know there are many different varieties of that, but whatever it means supporting the choice to have a family and supporting that family once there is a family. So I'm hoping for all of those things.
I am right there with you. The book is called Fair Shake, Women and the Fight to Build a Just Economy. You should all pick it up. Naomi, thank you so much for being here with us today and for all of the great information.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks. We'll be right back with your mailbag. We've all had one of those moments where we really needed deodorant and didn't have it on hand. I remember more than one time I have gotten caught running later in the day than I've expected and then had to just jog off to meet a friend for dinner or even worse, a business meeting. Fortunately, I don't have to worry about that anymore. Now, I don't leave the house without my Lumi Toasted Coconut Whole Body Deodorant. And bonus, who doesn't like smelling like a tropical paradise? As a special offer for my listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine that 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, what you're really getting is 40% off the starter pack. Use code HERMONEY for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That is HERMONEY at LumiDeodorant.com. We are back for our mailbag. My daughter, Julia Chatsky, is joining us. And Julia, this one is interesting. We have one question for me and one question for you.
I know. Lucky me. The listeners are liking me.
They are. So let's kick into this, and then I'm going to read the question for you.
Oh, a little change up. Okay.
We'll switch hats, but we'll go with the first one first.
Okay. Our first question comes from Sarah. She writes, "Hi, Jean and Julia. I work in the healthcare industry and I'm thinking of leaving my job, but it's hard because after doing this work for the past 5 years, I realize why a lot of women are in care-related jobs despite often getting paid less and working harder. I feel like if I leave, there will be no one to take my place. I'm seeing it everywhere I look. Healthcare, education, childcare. Women are often overworked and burned out, and there's still always shortages. I guess my question is it okay to leave this field altogether knowing that my work is so needed? Thanks, Sarah."
Oh, wow. This is Sarah. I got to tell you, I think this may be the toughest question that I have ever been asked because I don't know that there is a good answer. I've recently spent a decent amount of time in hospitals. I have the utmost respect and admiration for the people, women and men, who do this work. It is grueling and sometimes not rewarding, and you have to deal with families like mine that were frustrated when we weren't getting the answers that we wanted to get. But I really think this is a put your own oxygen mask on first kind of a situation. And if this isn't something that you're able to keep up with because it's taking a real toll on your mental health or your physical health, I think you have to take a step back and realize there are a lot of ways to serve. There are a lot of ways to do good for others. And maybe you have to find a different way in. We all make deals with ourselves about what we will and we won't do, what we're able to do, what we'll continue to do, what we won't do. The fact that you wrote this letter, it really sounds to me like you need a break. And maybe you take that break and you figure out another way to do this work in an environment that is a little healthier for you overall. I kind of think it's like parenting. If you're under tremendous stress as a parent, you know that you're not doing the best that you could for your kids or with your kids, and you got to look for a way to shake that up so that you can bring your best self home each night. I think the same is true here. So I would look for a way to make a change, and I hope you let us know what that change is going to be. What do you think, Jules?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think at the end of the day, you can't put your best foot forward and do your best work unless you're taking care of yourself. And I think Sarah needs to take care of herself in this instance.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Sarah, good luck with that. Our next question comes from Kayla. She writes, "Hi, Julia. I know we're around the same age."
I can't believe it.
So this question is for you. "I'm 26 and I want to succeed in my career and make a lot of money, but I feel weird saying it out loud in my group of friends, like I'm being greedy or overly obsessed with work. My friend group is more of the lazy girl job type, and I don't think they'd understand. How do I find a supportive group of women that also want to move up in their careers?"
I mean, what a loaded question, right? Because I'm like, Kayla, what do you do? Where are you based? What is a lazy girl job? What do you think? What's a lazy girl job, Mom?
A lazy girl job trended. I can't believe I know this and you don't. A lazy girl job trended on TikTok. It's basically a job where you can show up, do your work, do no more than your work, and go home and get paid. It's one where you can sort of check out emotionally.
Got it. Yeah. Kayla, sounds like I, like you, don't have a lazy girl job. I definitely feel on a lot of the time. I've been everywhere from a 3-person company to a 70-person company. But at both of those places, I was able to make friends with some of my coworkers. And some people really, like even my boyfriend is like, my coworkers aren't my friends, they're my coworkers. But I actually think your coworkers can be your friends. And through this, I've been at my last role for 2 years and I totally have this like friend group of four. We go to each other's birthday parties, each other's apartments. I know their friends, their boyfriends. I'm just friends with their friends now. So I think your work-minded people are probably one vertical. And I also think there are so many influencers who are building communities right now. So whether that's like someone like Jenna Palick, who has Facebook groups called Fun on Weekdays, and you join her Facebook groups, and she has WhatsApp groups for all different cities, that would be a really nice place to start to meet younger people closer to her age. Other creators that do that, like any of the, like, if you're in New York, any of the hot girl walks on the West Side Highway, there are a bunch of creators who do their own, quote, hot girl walks on weekend days or early mornings. If you're into fitness, I think workout classes and becoming a regular at a place, I know it's intimidating. I can speak from myself, like I don't work out, but I have found that the more consistently I go at the same time and to the same class, I know the people who are in the class, they get coffee, I'm finally getting the invite to get the coffee after. So have patience with yourself and don't be afraid to put yourself out there. I think there are so many Facebook groups like Sweats in the City, which is mostly the one I'm in is New York City based, but I'm sure they have other city based adjacent. I think Facebook group is actually a really nice way to network and meet people. And people write all the time, "Hi, I'm a 30-something. I work in law and I'm looking for friends. I just moved here from California." And people, they respond. So put yourself out there. And also, it's okay to also acknowledge that you and your friends may have some differences, right? Like, I have friends who don't work in similar fields than I do. And that still doesn't mean that they're any less of a friend. It just means that the activities we may do together may shift, right? They may not want to spend as much money on things that I may be willing to spend money on, but that doesn't mean like having food in a park is not any less enjoyable than it was before I realized that we're not career oriented. Does that answer your question, you think?
I think that is a fantastic answer. I picked up some resources from you there, Jules. So thank you for that. And thanks, Kayla, for writing with a question for Julia. If anybody else has a question for Julia, please send it in. And if you have any other money-related questions, we'd love to hear from you. Just send them to us by emailing us at mailbag@hermoney.com. Jules, thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for joining me today on Her Money. Thanks to Naomi Kahn for explaining how women can get ahead in a winner-take-all economy. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our show at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love hearing what you think. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Edelman Financial Engines. Her Money is produced by Haley Pascalides. This show is mixed and mastered by CDM Sound Studios. Our music is provided by Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Check out our new podcast, How She Does It with Karen Feinerman, for intimate cocktail party style conversations with today's most talented female leaders. This podcast is also part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. You can find us and other shows like us at airwavemedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon.